The Isle of Man celebrated World War II veteran, 103-year-old James Fenton, reflected recently on his attendance at the 80th anniversary Victory Over Japan commemoration event. He spoke to Simon Richardson about it at length and about his life as a soldier during the ferocious campaign in Burma. We'll hear that conversation in full shortly. But first, this year has marked a number of important anniversaries related to World War II. Here's Amy Griffiths.
The 8th of May, 1945. After almost 6 years of war, that was the day Britain and its allies formally accepted Nazi Germany's surrender. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the then Prime Minister Winston Churchill announced World War II in Europe had come to an end.
Hostilities will end officially at 1 minute after midnight tonight, Tuesday, the 8th of May. We may allow ourselves a brief period of rejoicing. Today is Victory in Europe Day. Advance Britannia. Long live the cause of freedom. God save the King.
Of course, it wasn't the total end of the war. That came in August after Victory in Japan Day. However, it was a huge milestone and a massive step towards peace with the end of Hitler's regime. And at Churchill's request, the country took to the streets to celebrate. I've been to Grovemount Residential Home in Ramsey to meet some of those who took part in those celebrations.
My name's John.
John, hi, lovely to meet you. What do you remember about VE Day? Do you remember it?
Oh, yes. Well, I was 15.
Oh, wow. God.
Yeah.
You're telling me you're 95?
Yeah.
You don't look a day over 70. I don't believe that for a second.
How much did you want the barrel of?
So you were 15, so what do you remember of the war
yes,
then?
I know it. I remember it well.
Where were you at the time?
Well, I was 10 when the war broke out. And I remember it quite well, although we lived in Bradford, which is in West Yorkshire, and we didn't have much damage there. There was a shop that used to sell pies, and they had a smoking pie in the window, an artificial thing, of course. And the only bomb that fell was fell on this pie.
Just on the one pie?
Yeah.
Well, that's Robert's lucky
pie,
in some ways.
Robert's pie shop, yeah.
Gosh, and so then what are your memories of VE Day and that war coming to an end?
Oh, well, I was in Pudsey then, and of course everybody was out dancing and messing about, you know, how they do.
Because was there just a real massive sense of relief that it was finally over?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's the kind of one thing that really stands out for you?
Well, there's nothing once, just one thing, because there's a lot of things that are happening, weren't they? So I was quite happy that the war was over and everything was, we could get back to normal, really.
Yes, hi, my name's Alan. The first thing I was 8 years old, I grew up in a town called Hexham in Northumberland. It's halfway between Newcastle and Carlisle. And the day the war broke out, and that sounds like a comedian to say that, I was 8 years old and I was in the Abbey Choir. And I remember them, they brought the radio into the church and we listened to Neville Chamberlain's speech saying that we are now at war with Germany. 10 minutes after they said this, the local council started the air raid siren. So I was sitting in the choir store with another siren. Well, I'm not going to stop here while it's an air raid. I'm going to go home. Well, I remember a chap called Bobby Simmons, I remember his name. You know, sit down soon, you're all right. And during the war, my father was called up. He was called up for the RAF. And he was in the RAF until after VA, VJ Day. But during the war, just with my dad being in the Air Force, he was one of the first people in the RAF regiment. They were trapped at that during the war. He didn't go abroad, he served down south on the south coast all the time. They were in the light anti-aircraft gun squadron, shooting down doodle bugs, flying bombs as they came over. But he's a storekeeper, he was in charge of the store, so he was all right.
How did it feel having your dad serving? I mean, what impact did that have on you as an eight-year-old boy?
Very proud, actually. I mean, when he used to come home in his uniform, I used to love for him to come out in his uniform with nothing better than to walk down the street with his father in uniform, you know. I mean, most of the lads in our class, all their fathers were serving one of the forces, yes.
And so in that sense, I suppose VE Day had even more of a profound effect because you knew that hopefully that meant your dad was coming home.
Well, that's right, yeah, that's right, of course. But he was in and left the VG Day, which is in August. But he didn't go abroad, he just eventually came home, you know, got back to normal.
How did you feel on VE Day when that news came that the war in Europe was over?
Well, the thing was, I got ready to go to school. And I was getting ready to go to school. My mother said, I think you'll be sent home, mind. I said, why? She said, well, I'm sure I just heard two men talking in the street outside. They said the Germans had surrendered. So I went to school, though. And the said master, Mr. Slater, said, right over there, right here. Got us all in the hall. He said, the Germans have surrendered. This is going to be called VE Day. And you can all go home. You know, you've got the rest of the week off. Hooray. And I remember that evening. And in the state very near us, they built the most enormous bonfire. Now, you always remember a chap, he's one of our school friend's father's. He came out halfway through with a kilt on and did a Highland fling in front of the bonfire. And then after that, that was it. You know, it was time to go home and forget about it, yeah.
But what a way to celebrate as well. And I suppose the whole community coming together, everyone coming out.
Everybody was out. That was it. Everybody's here.
What do you take away from that time, I suppose? How has it stayed with you throughout your life?
I just keep remembering at different parts. That's all different parts of it all, you know. I was lucky we didn't have anyone in the family who was killed or wounded or anything.
Why do you think it's important for us to still be remembering VE Day 80 years on?
Well, I think it's very important. I mean, a lot of people lost their lives in that, you know, and families are disrupted and everything. It's very important to people. I don't think it should ever be forgotten. Definitely not. Same with VG Day, the number of terrible things that happened in those places.
We wouldn't have the life that we have now had it not been for the sacrifices that were made then, would we?
Oh, you wouldn't have the life we had, definitely not. If he'd won, we'd have been a hell of a life, wouldn't we?
And I'm going to work my way around. I'm hoping I've got the right blue jumper. Is it Derek? Is that your name, sorry?
Yes, Derek.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Amy and I'm from Manx Radio.
Amy from Manx Radio. Mm-hmm. I remember my dad going to war and coming back and bringing 7 medals with him.
Wow. What were his medals for?
Fighting the Germans. And he was sort of fighting the war in North Africa. And in Malta, he was chasing the enemy troops there. And then he came around to England. And he started fighting the war from that side of the channel. And he's earned, 7 medals from fighting that war.
And how did that make you feel as his son? Must be an immense amount of pride.
I'm so proud of him. I've got medals on the wall. They're there. And I'm so proud of my dad. He had a medal given special from the French for helping them out. There was a medal upstairs there. When he crossed the channel to fight the Germans, the French gave him a special medal for them being helped by him.
That's just an incredible story. And what was it like for you at home? Where was home for you at that time?
I missed him. I was born Manx and I definitely missed him. And I was glad when he came back. That was the main thing. I was a lad. I went to Polrose School.
Thinking back to VE Day, and especially with your dad serving in the war, do you remember much of that day and what it felt like and how you felt?
It doesn't seem very much maybe to you, but I remember the song. There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover tomorrow. Just you wait and see. There'll be love and laughter and peace ever after tomorrow when the world is free.
You have got a beautiful voice, Derek, I have to say. A really beautiful voice. Yeah, it deserves the round of applause. It absolutely does. And I think, do you think that really captures the feeling of how people felt?
Yeah. Well, VAD, yes, I was just a young lad, but I could appreciate the fact that I was without him and not here. And glad when he came back.
Yes, I gladly talk to you, but I haven't got much to say. I do remember VE Day. I'd just been left school about 6 months, just got a job at the main fashion house in the Isle of Man at the time, Lyons, of course, and the place was just a holiday resort. It was wonderful.
A very different time to now, isn't it?
It is. It was just the service people that were coming on leave, the Americans and everything, they were all over here. And, of course, we had a whale of a time.
I can imagine. What kind of things were you getting up to back then?
Well, of course, we had several dance places, which was great. We had all the cinemas that we had then, which, again, lots of things to do. And it was just a lovely atmosphere, a great holiday place. And everybody, of course, was happy because of the end of the war. And yes, I don't remember anything in particular except being kissed by absolutely everybody.
How exciting!
I was waiting for there was even a couple of film stars that came over on leave as well.
Wow.
Gene Raymond was one of them, but I never got to kiss him.
Oh, well, that's a shame. Well, more of a shame for him that he didn't get to kiss you. And do you remember there being many celebrations on and around VE Day?
Not over the top, but yes, there were. I mean, because obviously everybody was happy that people would be coming back home and the loved ones had been away for so long. My father hadn't been away for very long, but he had been away. And yes, no, I remember more later than then. Yes.
And your father came home, did he?
Yes, he did indeed. Yes, yes. He was out east and sent lots of lovely things home. That's the part I remember being young. And
like what?
Oh, well, like we had chocolates and things rationed here. He sent boxes of things home and he even sent some Indian carpets home for the house. It was amazing what they could buy when they were abroad.
And how did it feel when he came home?
Oh, well, of course, it was more natural then.
We always say in our family, if one of us isn't there, we're like a table with a dodgy leg where we work and we function, but it's not as stable, is it, as having the whole family together?
It is, yes. You know, it was nice. Yes, but everybody was so happy. That's all I really remember about it. And like I say, being kissed by everybody.
And Gene, your husband fought in the war, didn't he? And so what did he do?
Well, he was a bomber pilot. And he bombed Germany and several other places too. Then after the war, he was bringing prisoners of war home, which was very sad. And he said he'd never forgive the Japanese.
Because what kind of impact did it have on him? Did he ever talk about it much?
No, he didn't. I used to go across with him and we'd visit his bomb aimer and his rear gunner. And I'd just sit quietly whilst we had dinner and hear them talk, because they talked about things that they wouldn't talk about in front of other people. And they said how awful it was sometimes, and how the bomb aimer said that he never knew how my husband got them back, because when they got back, he counted there had been 52 hits on the aeroplane of shrapnel. And yet he got them back and managed to land somewhere as well. And
he was a hero as well.
Well, yes, he was. He got the MBE and the DFC and bar. And of course, I went to Buckingham Palace.
So were you proud of him and proud of the work that he did there?
I was very proud of him, but I just loved him so much anyway.
Back in the year 2025, and celebrations are taking place once again across the island to mark the 80th anniversary of VE Day, from acts of remembrance to special concerts. But when I asked Derek why it was important for us to still remember the events of the Second World War 8 decades on, and how he felt when it was over, he only had this to say.
There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover tomorrow. Just you wait and see. There'll be love and laughter and peace ever after tomorrow when the world is free.
With thanks to Amy Griffiths for those wonderful conversations. World War II veteran James Fenton, now 103 years old, was introduced to the King and Queen and Prime Minister Keir Starmer at the recent 80th anniversary Victory Over Japan commemoration event at the National Memorial Arboretum in Staffordshire. He spoke at length to Simon Richardson about that and his life as a soldier during the ferocious campaign in Burma during World War II, as part of the so-called Forgotten Army.
James, it's fair to say it's been a tumultuous 4 weeks for you, culminating, of course, in meeting the King and the Queen recently and the 80th anniversary of Victory Over Japan. Tell us about that experience, first of all.
Well, the thing was that when I was first of all invited, I knew it was available, that this, I don't like to call it a commemoration, and I got news through a very good friend of mine that if I wanted, I could go down to the Arboretum. And I began to wonder. I thought, well, of course, the one thing you always wonder about is the weather. But after a little while thinking about it, I thought, yes, I would go, take the chance and see what it was like. Fortunately, it was a very successful trip, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. Every minute of it, it was all absolutely thoroughly organised, because I'm a little bit immobile, and of course they had a wheelchair for me, that the transport or by plane was arranged, so everything went according to plan, successfully.
Now, you met the King and Queen. What did he say to you?
Well, it's what I said to him, actually. He came in and said about the Burma veterans. Of course, I met the Queen first on this occasion, but afterwards we met the King. When he came along, he said, "Sir, Your Majesty, I am an official ambassador, but what I would like to do is to invite you to come and visit our island and the Isle of Man." I said, "I know that you're very friendly with our current present governor." I also had with me a little Ellen Van In lapel badge, which I handed to him. I said, "That's a reminder, sir, that I hope you will come and see us before too long, and we'd be most, most welcome. All the people of the island." I said, "We have seen the Queen, we saw her a little earlier when she came up and met the governor, but I said, it's your turn now to come along, so I hope you will." Well, whether that will materialise, I don't know.
Now, looking back, James, you served with the 178 Field Regiment of the Royal Artillery during World War II as part of what was often referred to as the Forgotten Army in Burma. Is that how, as soldiers, you felt about it, that you were forgotten by people back home?
There's no doubt about it. We were forgotten because all the news and everything else that was coming through about the situation in Burma was all, less official or less important than the European war. And in fact, I think a lot of people, although they did get to know about Burma, where Burma was and what the Japanese were up to, but of course the European war was covered so much by all the nations. Well, so was the Burma war. I mean, we had all the people from all the world actually fighting alongside us. But anything on the news came along, I remember my brother saying to me a few times, because he was in the British Army and he was fighting on D-Day. He landed in France on D-Day, on the occasion there. Unfortunately, he was wounded and he suffered a little bit after that through having been dive bombed. But the one other thing, that when peace came along and they signed the armistice for the European war, he wrote to me. This was whilst people were celebrating, making swings on lampposts, providing afternoon teas in the streets, and jumping about like mad. He wrote to me in Burma saying, look, he says, the war here, they think it's finished. He says, nobody thinks about you still fighting out there. Because there we were, the war with us hadn't finished. We were still being shelled and afraid of the Japanese every night.
The campaign in Burma was particularly brutal, wasn't it? You were a young man then with his life in front of him. It must have been terrifying.
The thing that I am most grateful for, I never really encountered that type of trouble. Now, because I was with the Royal Artillery, although we were up in the front line, the people who got it the most, of course, were all the infantrymen. Mm. Now, not being in the infantry, we did get the Japanese coming attack us from very, especially in the night time, but it was quite different for the ones who were actually right at on the front line. But in Burma, there's no such thing really as a front line. Because of the mountainous country, you could have some people further along in the country in Burma, and they were fighting the Japanese, and they might be behind you on the mountain fighting there, and you're in this position here trying to oust them from where you are. That it wasn't a direct line across Burma like you had with the European war, where they could say, oh, we've pushed them back this line. Well, we did push them back, but what we had to do, we were doing this in the different areas, the different units that were there, streaming down in different lines of attack, down to Rangoon, as far as we could get them there.
And of course, it wasn't just a battle against the Japanese. You were in a jungle a lot of the time with sky-high temperatures, humidity and all manner of dangerous wildlife. Was it as much a fight against the environment as it was against the enemy almost?
Oh, so much so, because we had so many people, you could suddenly be okay, and then before long you were feeling very sick. The worst thing of all was dysentery that was easy to get. The thing, you see, there was no clear water anywhere in the European war. I suppose you could find water in various places. There was no water in Burma. All the water that we was allowed to drink was actually brought to us in little tankers, like the old petrol tankers, but they were filled with purified water. The drivers had to go to certain little units and pick up water and have it processed. And believe me, it was terrible stuff. It really was. It wasn't like just going to drink a nice cup of cold water.
I bet you missed the water back here, didn't you?
Pardon?
I bet you missed the water back home.
Oh, well, we did. Now, the very strange thing, and people I don't think very many people even know now, and it's never reported, was what we had was a choggle. Now that sounds a strange word.
It does.
But it's a thing made like a sacking. It's like sacking, and it's in the shape of a large bottle, and it's canvas. And you would fill this with the water from the water cart, and it would you could tie it round the neck to keep any moist dust or foreign matter out of it, and hang it on the side of the vehicle. Now the water inside this choggle coming through the canvas would slowly evaporate for some way, and that's how it worked as you were going along. And it was the only way. When you actually opened the top to have a drink of water, it was cool, cold water. Now, that's the system was because the water inside was evaporating and it was getting cooler. And that's the only way that you could get a cold drink. And you kept one of these choggles, personally, tied to a vehicle, usually, wherever you were, so that you could use that if you wanted to.
Even though I bet you would have preferred a nice ice-cold beer.
Oh, definitely. Well, occasionally. I mean, there were, when we just happened to have an occasion when we had got the Japanese ousted from a position, things were quietening down. There were occasions when we were sent up and various drinks for us to have. And that was great relief because there were breaks in the fighting in that way, because we were pushing them down from North Burma right down south to Rangoon. Obviously, when they'd retreated, we had to follow them up and find a new position to attack them again. But of course, the minute they moved and retreated, that means it didn't stop, because they'd set up their positions once again for the night, and then they'd start shelling us. They had a great advantage here, because having just covered that bit of Burma itself and retreated it through the jungle, they could easily make a guess at where the best position was for our unit to have moved forward and being encamping, digging trenches. So they really had a fairly reasonable, accurate range position for their guns, and they would fire them every night. And I think one of the purposes was, I think, to keep us awake so that we wouldn't get any sleep.
Of course, sleep is so important. Now, James, you've led an extraordinary life. You've had incredible experiences. You've experienced the horrors and the futility of war, really. How does it make you feel when you see the same mistakes being made over and over again in the world? I'm talking now places like Ukraine and Gaza.
Well, you got ahead of me there. Whilst you were asking the question, Ukraine came to mind. And, it's so annoying, having lived all these years and finding out now that the same situation is here in front of us. Similar things happening. Why it can't really be sorted out? It's a matter of you get certain people who just want to control everything. Mm. And this is the biggest problem. If only we could get much more sensible people to do things. I mean, that's why we, the British, are having so many people come into England and various places. I don't know whether we're getting too many arriving in the island, but this is a, I wonder what, we're going to be a cosmopolitan nation in a few years' time, rather than a Manx nation, an English nation, or a Welsh nation.
So many years on, obviously Japan is now a very peaceful nation and very much against war. What are your feelings about Japan and the Japanese today?
Well, it, after the war, of course, we never spoke about this. I never spoke about my actions in Burma, about the Japanese, and my brother didn't speak to me. In fact, I know very little of what he did. But the thinking about time going on and the Japanese, you have to realise that the world has to settle down. You can't keep hating everybody throughout the years. And as a matter of fact, I can give you an instance, quite a truthful instance, because here on the island, I am very fond of the camera obscura and quite knowledgeable about it. In the past, on recent years, when it was renovated, we had a request for a group of Japanese to come over. Now, Peter Kelly, who was also the one, the big benefactor for the camera obscura, he said, would I interview them and go down there? And there I was with a whole crowd of Japanese, quite friendly and interesting, because to them, this, the camera obscura, was a unique feature. And it didn't really bother me at all, because I knew that things had happened. I couldn't put them responsible for it, but I did get through it, and we got on quite admirably with the situation, and I think they enjoyed their visit.
It's good to hear. Now, James, you've achieved so much in your life. You're 103 years old. Is there anything that you would still like to do that you haven't managed in those 103 years?
Oh, dear, there are so many things that I have done. I can't think there's anything at all that... really? No, I'm not a sports fan, so I can't say I wish I'd done a bit more football. The sports that I'm interested in are cricket, snooker, and mainly, and of course, tennis. I played a lot of tennis when I was younger, even before the war, when I was, almost a schoolboy. And that's the happiness that I had, really.
And I suppose the final question, what advice would you have for young people growing up in the Isle of Man, in the world today, that maybe you could pass on?
Oh, no, that's a very difficult question, because what can I say to them? Because even though you try to say, well, live a perfectly straight and truthful life and behave yourself in every way, that's the thing, get up in the morning and not think of actually doing something that would not be approved of by your friends or neighbours. Try to be happy with them and be responsible. And if you have any chance to help a neighbour, you should do that too, really. However old you are, or however old your neighbour is, look after your neighbour as well.
What a good way to end. James, it's been a pleasure and an honour to meet you, and thank you very much.
Fine, thank you. I'm very pleased. Of course, you know, Manx Radio has always been a godsend in my life, because I have listened to it. Unfortunately, that is impossible for me now, because of my hearing and my eyesight, which of course does come to us all in the end, and it's no help for me at the present time. And therefore, that's the thing I really miss, being able to listen to Manx Radio.